Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, it's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks, Alan. Good to be here.
We love to have you because we love your name, not only your brain, but we love your name.
Well, thanks.
I mean, sounds like something that ought to be in an old Roy Rogers Western.
It was close to something like that, right? Yancey Derringer, the riverboat gambler.
And Yancey Roy, as in Roy Rogers.
There you go.
See? Okay, you've been looking at healthcare as a specialty, subspecialty for a while now. So tell us about the effect that the healthcare bill, whether it was some are being called Trump Care, will wreak on the folks, the politicians here in New York.
Well, as we speak right now, the House is still pressing for a vote. It's not clear yet whether the Republicans actually will have a majority. But beyond that, even if it is passed by the House, it faces a lot of uncertainty in the U.S. Senate because there's a lot of skepticism on either side of the aisle there. There's questions about how many folks will drop off the uninsured rolls or become uninsured over the next 10 years. What will be the effects on folks who are in the sort of the worst situation when it comes to health insurance, which is you're buying it as an individual, and how much will your premiums go up or down? And when it comes to New York, there's an amendment that was attached to the Republican bill that only affects New York, and that would force the state to pick up all of the cost of its Medicaid program and stop imposing part of the cost on counties.
Now, let me just
and this
say,
plays
yeah,
into a big political issue in this state.
Yeah, let me just say for upstate, but it doesn't take effect the same way in New York City.
It would exclude New York City.
Which is half the state
right.
population.
And not only half the state, but the bulk of the local Medicaid costs.
Sure.
The reason that the Republicans say they are excluding New York City, and the folks who are driving this, we should point out, a couple of upstate Republicans representatives, Chris Collins of Buffalo, John Faso of Kinderhook, which he represents a good deal of the Capital District here. The reason they excluded New York City is they say that the city has its own income tax, and it's sort of its own economy, whereas Columbia County and Albany County, these folks can't impose the income tax on their residents, and so therefore New York City is a special case.
But also, we know that the moderates like Representative Stefanik, like John J. Faso, who you've just referenced, are in a really rough spot. Because people don't like this Trump guy, and they don't like the healthcare thing, and people are really aggravated. They're mad at them. They don't hold town meetings. So this, I think, was designed to give those two some cover.
Well, you know, it's also been a policy initiative for a lot of Republicans on the state level and the New York State Association of Counties, which is sort of the umbrella lobbying group for a lot of the upstate counties, and Faso personally for a long time. He has pushed for the state should take over the county share of Medicaid. So in some ways, it's also fulfilling for them a policy objective, which they long sought, which is an interesting thing. A lot of the fight over this, Ryan, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, President Donald Trump, talking about the politics and the win and the loss and the victory. And meanwhile, from a strictly a policy standpoint, Faso and Collins are trying to get in a policy that a lot of the upstate Republicans have pushed for a long time.
On the other hand, he can now turn around, John Faso can turn around and make the argument to the counties, I kept your taxes down.
Exactly.
So it looks attractive.
And it also puts a lot of pressure on Governor Cuomo and the state legislature as a whole. And as a result, you've seen the governor really react strongly.
He did. He blew his top.
He blew his top is one way to put it, yeah. He held a press conference specifically to blast this amendment and say, you know, what a devastating effect it would have on New York. And then 24 hours after that, even stepped it up further with his staff releasing district-by-district hospital totals whether it was by Congressman Faso's district or Congressman Collins' district, or even on Long Island, they did it for other Republicans, Lee Zeldin, Peter King, saying, here are the cuts that will happen to your hospitals if this amendment goes through. Now, the Republicans fired back very strongly themselves and said Cuomo was, well, outright lying and painting a doomsday picture. They say that the way the governor is framing it is says that he will either have to raise income taxes or cut hospitals. They say the main thing he's leaving out is, by the way, you could cut spending. You could cut out some of your pet project spending for the Buffalo Billion or the Bronx Billion, or maybe your college tuition program. You're leaving out all of these other options to rein in spending, and you're threatening people and misrepresenting what could actually happen here.
Well, it's no secret that Andrew Cuomo is going to run for governor again. And he has been very, very quiet. Let me put it this way. I believe he's been relatively quiet when it comes to Donald Trump. Schneiderman's been doing all the heavy hauling, the attorney general. He's suing him on different fronts. He's hiring on special people to help him in his office, who clearly will have some blood in their eye where Trump is concerned. So Cuomo's been fairly quiet, I suspect, because he didn't want exactly what's happening. He didn't want to get saddled with all this Medicaid stuff. But now he is, and all of a sudden he goes ballistic.
And he's going ballistic at the House. You notice that we talked about his press conference, which was held in Manhattan a couple of days ago. I was not there, but it was televised. And several times he referred to just the president, but he wouldn't say Donald Trump's name. He was even asked by a reporter, why don't you say the president's name? And again, he just said the president. And it almost seems like that's a calculated decision that in this case, he doesn't want to punch upward politically, if you will.
Sure.
He doesn't want to punch upward and take on someone who's in an office who could make life difficult for him or bring problems to him. Instead, whereas you see Schneiderman, you see some of the other elected Democrats taking aim specifically at Trump, it's notable that Governor Cuomo is focusing all of his rhetoric on the Republican Congress.
So, Yancey Roy, here's the thing. Sometimes you never know who's on which side. So, in this case, John Flanagan, who is the Senate Majority Leader, is siding with Cuomo on GOP health plan changes in order to get New York GOP votes. What do you make of that?
You know, what you're referring to is John Flanagan said he was skeptical of the Medicaid shift and shifting it to the counties. His rationale essentially goes like this. I'm all for reducing tax burden for homeowners, but if all we're doing is shifting the collection agency, then what good
does
it do?
From the counties to the state.
Right. Then what good does it do the homeowner? I think that opinion surprised some people because, as we mentioned earlier here, shifting the Medicaid cost to the state has long been a goal of a lot of Republican elected leaders. So Flanagan expressing skepticism about this was a little bit surprising. And at the same time, I think that, this is going to be out of the hands of the state legislature, whether this amendment stays in or not. The legislatures and the governor will be the one saddled with how to deal with it and what choices to make afterwards if this ever gets passed.
So how come Flanagan's doing it? In other words, what is your theory on a hypothesis on why Flanagan is not siding with some of the upstate counties?
I think if you had to take a few educated guesses, I think that look, New York is a blue state. Trump is not popular. The proposed repeal of Obamacare is not an idea that goes over well for a lot of folks in New York. And I think that they don't want to necessarily step in and sign on membership with the state Senate with, we would like to embrace this American Health Care Act.
Yeah. Yancey Roy, the Trump effect on New York, immigration. De Blasio says, we are preparing New York City schools to resist ICE agents. What's that all about?
Well, Again, this is a philosophical divide over how to handle the immigration issue. And what de Blasio is referring to is wanting to make clear that in New York City, they would resist what you've seen in other places, which is immigration agents trying to actually start this process of, you know, deporting people or moving to start the process of deporting people. I think it's a big philosophical divide over the immigration issue and where folks stand on it.
Let me ask you this. Andrew Cuomo, of course, as we've mentioned, is running for governor again. He's already said so, and we know he is, and we know he's got a huge war chest ready to take on all comers. Are there any comers?
Well, there's a lot of folks who would like to from the Republican side, or who are just, you know, talking around the edges of it. Rob Astorino, who ran in 2014, Westchester County Executive.
Same old, same old.
He is interested. John Flanagan, who we've talked about, he has said he's interested. Other Republicans have said, when asked directly, something like, oh, I'd never rule it out. You never can tell. So yeah. let's add the laundry list there. Who said that? Well, John DeFrancisco of Syracuse. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin. But sometimes you got to judge whether this is a serious weighing by these guys or if it's just, look, when someone gets asked directly, are you thinking of running? Would you ever think of running? Most of the time they're going to say, well, I never rule anything out. So I think there's still some more time to coalesce on this. And while you bring up reelection, let's jump back for a second to the Medicaid issue and how the fallout might play. When the Republicans floated this idea of the Medicaid takeover, the governor said, this will force me, perhaps, to either cut hospitals or raise income taxes 10%. Now, think about that for a second. And some Republicans were saying this later in the day after he said this. Are you telling me that a sitting governor who's running for re-election is going to run in a year where he's raising taxes 10% or drastically cutting aid to local hospitals? I think some Republicans are wondering, is that bluff or is that talk when he says he might do this when you know full well that the next election is coming up?
Yeah. Well, he is obviously also running for president. Now, there are many people who say, oh, well, he hasn't said that, and he's up to now denying it, but he's running for president. Just take it from me.
Yeah, never rule anything out. Yeah,
no, he's actively running for president. He's bringing the right people into his campfire, and he's doing all that he has to do. So this is what happens now in terms of his leadership against the Trump administration. From Cuomo's point of view, has to be very, very important to him. If people think he finked out on taking on Trump, it's not going to be good for Cuomo. On the other hand, Trump could really punish him quite badly with what he does to New York State.
True. I think that's why he's been a little bit careful in his wording on his attacks on different policies. He's never called out Trump by name. He's been carefully avoiding that, although he has heavily criticized the president's stance on immigration. He's heavily criticized this bill to replace Obamacare. What did he do as part of his, you talk about him running and the signs that he's running. What was basically his first action of this legislative session? It was to hold a press conference with Bernie Sanders and embrace the idea of free college tuition.
Tacking left.
Right. Left. Yes, left. Correct, I meant. And we've seen them continue to do that on various issues, whether it was hate crimes, and now going directly against the American Health Care Act, and also, by the way, at the same time, hiring about a dozen people who either used to work for Hillary Clinton or Obama to beef up his own staff.
It's amazing. I guess the answer to the question is, right now, I'm not hearing anybody in the Republican Party who can take on Cuomo from you. I mean, you mentioned all the usual suspects, but that's what they are. And when I talk to Ed Cox, the chairman of the state Republican Party and a man who knows his politics as Richard Nixon's son-in-law, I always say, you haven't got anybody. And he said, yes, we do. This guy's got a radio show. This guy's got, you know, this guy's this, that. But it does seem that the bench is pretty empty. Although I suppose I have to tell you that George Pataki was a guy who nobody thought could beat Mario Cuomo.
Right. That's the classic example, right? 1994, for those of us who's been around for that long.
We're old. Yeah.
You know, in 1994, the Republicans said, we're getting behind this guy, George Pataki. And everyone was like, who? A freshman senator? There's no way. But all of the political storms came together to create a win, an upset win for George Pataki. So I don't think that you can look at, let's face it, New York is, as we said, a heavily blue state. Democrats far outnumber Republicans in this state. Therefore, it's always going to be difficult for a Republican to win in this state, just like it's difficult for a Democrat to win in some of your deep South states, Louisiana, Mississippi, etc. It's just hard. That said, it doesn't mean that it's always a lock that the Democrat will win. There's a lot of time before the election. There's a lot of potential cards to be played. For example, there is still an ongoing federal probe of folks close to the governor. His former top closest aide, Joe Prococo. That's a trial about bid rigging and fixed contracts that cuts very close to a lot of the Cuomo economic development projects. That might start in late spring. Who knows what could spin out of that? You never can tell what kind of things will come out of a trial. There's a lot of other factors to be played as well. So, yeah, I mean, just from this point forward, it looks like it'd be difficult for, like it always is, for any Republican to win a statewide office here. That said, I don't think,
look
at the choice issue, frankly. You mentioned George Pataki. When all of the last candidates that the Republicans have put up for governor have been anti-choice, and all of them, regardless of their personal style, end up coming up with roughly 1.5 million raw votes in New York, and they hit that ceiling. And pretty much you have to get to 2 million raw votes to win a statewide election. And I think if you're the Republicans, you might have to ask, if you run a candidate that's anti-choice, are you hitting a cap at 1.5 and you're never going to get to that 2 million, unless there's some other extraordinary circumstances?
Huh. Okay. So we've talked a lot, you and I, Yancey, over the years about ethics in the state legislature. People perceive it as a bunch of crooks. Let's face it, I ask a student, I say, well, what do you think? What do your parents think? They say, well, they're a bunch of crooks. Cuomo has been trying, especially because of what you just mentioned, the Joe Prococo trial coming up and the others, he's been trying to get them to go along with some kind of ethical revision about the way they do business in the legislature, something that I think is long overdue. You think we'll ever see it in our lifetimes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's unpack that a little bit. First of all, you know, the governor and the legislators say, and there is some truth to this, you can pass every law that you want and someone can still break the law, and that part is true. The other thing that the legislators will point out is, geez, how come the governor is always all of his ideas come down on what the legislature should do and what the legislature should give up. And there's not much in the way of executive branch reform here. So I think that's one of the tension points of the discussion, that the governor keeps hammering them, but they are pointing back at him and saying, what about,
and they're very angry
what
at
about
him.
Your branch?
They're yeah. very angry because he didn't give them a pay raise.
Well, that's also plays into this as well. And, you know, we should also mention that just this week, there was an indictment, and this was driven by Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general. There was an indictment of a sitting Niagara County senator and the guy he replaced, the retired Niagara senator. That was George Maziarz. The sitting senator is Robert Ort, essentially for election law violations and non-reporting of moving of money around during a campaign, to sort of put it in plain language. Ort has defiantly said this is baloney and he's going to fight it and he's not going to resign. But at the same time, we should watch this all closely because, as you know, right now, there's basically 32 members of the Republican caucus out of 63 seats in the state Senate. They also have an alliance with some renegade Democrats. But if Ort, who says he's innocent, but if something happens to Ort and he goes, well, then now there's only 31 Republicans. So that's going to, that trial, that upcoming trial that will be anticipated is going to play a lot into the balance of the Senate and what happens with legislation and what happens with ethics legislation.
Are the Democrats up to, if assuming that they can gain control, are they up to it?
Well, there's always this big question of how do the mainline Democrats and the breakaway Democrats ever get back together, and how do they decide to share power, and who actually controls the chamber? And they've never seemed, at this point, willing to make peace and figure that out. In fact, if anything, in the last 4 or 5 months since the Election Day, the tension between the two factions of the Democratic Party has gotten worse and worse, and it's even worse than between Democrats and Republicans in the state Senate.
One of my great heroes, Preet Bharara, has just taken a job at the NYU Law School, one of the best law schools in the country, in the world, by the way. They're not even saying he's going to be teaching. He'll be there. This is what we sometimes call a prestigious parking place, PPP. So there are a lot of speculation that he might run for office himself. If he took on Andrew Cuomo in a primary, would he win?
I don't know. You know, look, prosecutors always seem to be popular before they run for office, don't they?
Yeah.
Elliot Spitzer was the sheriff of Wall Street, the cover of Time magazine, because the one thing about being either a U.S. attorney or a state attorney general, you have a lot of freedom to kind of set your own agenda. If you want to make it about Wall Street, you can. If you want to make it about white-collar crime, you can. If you want to make it about corrupt public officials, you can focus on that and win a lot of credit if you're successful convicting people. And then as we've seen, though, convicting, indicting people is different from trying to run an executive branch or a legislative office. I don't know. You know, Preet Bharara is certainly, I think, popular. That's for sure. When you get into the calculus of running a statewide election and assembling a campaign committee with a lot of money that would be able to run, you know, that's a whole other question. And aside the fact that you're mentioning running a primary against the governor, running a primary against any sitting governor is just often a long shot bid, no matter what the circumstances are. The power of the incumbency is so great.
And also, not everybody knows who Preet Bharara is.
That's right.
It's unbelievable, but they don't.
Right.
So standing in the wings are Eric Schneiderman, obviously the man is the attorney general, otherwise known as almost governor, and obviously Preet Bharara. So if Cuomo is governor and he runs in 2018 and 2020, he's going to have to run for president, we think. Does he get out? Does he get out and leave the way clear for these other titans to take each other on?
You know, it's going to be an intriguing question to see how Cuomo's intentions towards 2020 might affect his judgment about 2018. There are a lot of folks out there who can make a strong case that a governor would be better off, if you really want to run for president in 2020, you're better off not running for governor again in 2018. Let's take a look at Chris Christie, just across the river in New Jersey. He was thought of as a lot of potential of as a Republican presidential candidate. He stayed in office. All of a sudden, he's kneecapped by the Bridgegate scandal and other issues going on with the tax rates there, and his candidacy never caught fire, even though a year before, folks thought he was a good candidate. I think any time that you're trying to run for president and manage the issues back in your own state, there's a lot of potential problems for you.
It's great to have Yancey Roy here explaining it all to us, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.